If you isolate a human being in a room with nothing but like a solitary text box, they go crazy.
Oh, absolutely. They lose their minds.
Right. So, why did the tech industry decide that was the best way to build artificial souls?
That is the big question, isn't it?
Yeah. I want you, our listener, to imagine something for a second. Just imagine having a vibrant, really eclectic group of 25 absolutely fascinating friends.
Okay, that's a lot of friends.
It is. And in this group, you've got, say, a cryptic Zen master,
Yep.
right? And a really sharp-tongued critic who never holds back.
Sounds
Oh, it
intense.
gets better.
Yeah.
You've also got a domineering Fortune 500 CEO, and then like a gentle, nurturing soul. Just this incredibly diverse cast of
I
characters.
mean, that sounds like the ultimate dinner party waiting to happen.
It totally does. But here is the catch. You are never allowed to actually host that dinner party.
Wait, never.
Never. You can never hang out with them in person. You can't play a game with them. You never go to the movies. You are only ever allowed to communicate with these 25 fascinating people via one-on-one text messages.
Oh, wow.
Just you and them in a solitary blank chat window forever. So my question to you is, how long until that gets incredibly mind-numbingly boring?
Well, I mean, the novelty would wear off in a matter of weeks, right? Maybe even days.
Exactly.
Because by restricting the interaction to text alone, you are completely stripping away the environment where personality actually lives and breathes and, reacts to stimuli.
And that claustrophobic scenario is the exact structural ceiling facing the artificial intelligence industry today.
It really is.
So, today's deep dive is based on a really highly insightful piece of source material. It's a post titled, AI Companion Should Play, Not Just Talk.
Right, from the Building Souls series.
Yeah, part three of the series, published back in March 2026.
It's a fantastic piece of analysis. Honestly, it diagnoses a technical and, well, psychological problem most of us feel, but haven't really articulated about our daily interactions with AI.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the platform the source material focuses on, which is this AI ecosystem called Mio.
Yes, Mio.
Our mission today is to figure out why simply chatting with an AI is a developmental dead end, and how moving from a simple chat box to like structured games unlocks actual genuine memories.
Right. And to understand the solution, we first have to look at the environment Mio built.
Set the stage for us.
So Mio comes out of the gate with 25 distinct, deeply built personas. You mentioned a few of the archetypes earlier, and the source actually gives us their specific names and behavioral weights.
Oh, right, like Coco.
Exactly. Coco is one of them. Her system prompt is heavily weighted toward being confrontational and, abrasive.
Always keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. And then you've got Lia Kong, who is tuned to be cryptic and very zen.
The Zen Master.
Right. And there's Lu Ting, who operates with this intense, domineering CEO energy, and Suru, who is prompted for gentleness and accommodation.
So that's 25 totally different architectural setups under the hood. But the author of this post points out a massive glaring issue with all of this.
A huge issue, yeah.
In a simple one-on-one chat window, all of those deeply researched, beautifully crafted system prompts are completely flattened.
They are, because the mechanical rhythm of the relationship is utterly identical across the board.
Right, it's just ping pong.
Exactly. You type a prompt, the large language model processes it, and it predicts a reply based on that specific persona's vocabulary. You type another prompt, it replies again.
Same exact flow.
It really doesn't matter if you're talking to Coco or Suru, the shape of the interaction just doesn't change.
So it's all exactly the same under the surface.
The text points out a brilliant insight here. The depth of the personality gets flattened by the shallowness of the interaction medium.
You know, it makes me think of an analogy. It's kind of like imagine you own a high-performance sports car, right?
Okay, I like where this is going.
Like a really incredibly tuned Ferrari. But you are only ever allowed to drive it in a school zone.
Oh, that's a perfect way to put it.
Right. Like, it doesn't matter if it can do 200 miles an hour. The rules of the road, or in this case, the medium of a chat box, give it absolutely no room to open up.
You're stuck going 15 miles an hour no matter what's under the hood.
Exactly. But I do have a question about the underlying mechanism here. Is this flattening happening because the AI models themselves suffer from context window limitations?
Like they're just forgetting who they are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do they just lose a thread of their own personality over a long text chain?
That's the assumption a lot of people make, honestly.
Yeah.
But the author clarifies that this really isn't a technology problem.
Really?
Yeah, the LLMs are perfectly capable of maintaining the persona's parameters indefinitely in their context window. It is entirely a design problem.
Oh, interesting. So it's the box we put them in?
Exactly. The medium of one-on-one text inherently limits expression. Over time, through a single static channel, there are only so many ways an AI can tell you how their day was.
That makes total sense. I mean, even the most eccentric human being would start to feel one-dimensional if you only ever texted them.
Completely.
So if one-on-one chat is essentially forcing our sports car to stay in the school zone, the natural next question the author tackles is, well, why not just expand the stage?
Let them hit the highway.
Yeah. Why not put all 25 of them into a massive group chat? Throw Coco, Lu Ting, and Liao Kong into a virtual room with the user and just let the context windows overlap.
Expanding the room seems like the obvious architectural fix, doesn't it?
It really does.
But the author actually tested this on the Mio platform, and the result was completely underwhelming. The chat devolved into a graveyard.
A graveyard, which honestly shouldn't surprise anyone who has ever been trapped in a giant family WhatsApp thread.
Oh my gosh,
yes. Or like a mandatory corporate Slack channel. It's just crickets.
What's fascinating here is the technical reason why those unstructured group chats fail.
Break that down for us.
So, from an LLM perspective, when you put three AI personas in a virtual room, you are essentially diffusing their attention mechanisms.
Because there's no single focus.
Exactly. They lack a central driving prompt. It essentially follows a very predictable entropy. Person A generates a statement, person B's model reads it, and, lacking any specific goal, defaults to its baseline conversational training.
Which is to be nice and agreeable.
Usually, yes, to respond politely. Then person C awkwardly changes the subject.
And then the awkward silence.
Right. There is a pause. And finally, an agent drops a generic low-temperature statement just to fill the silence.
Wow, crazy weather we're having.
Yes, because there are no stakes. Three AI personas in a room don't know who should talk first, what they should optimize their responses for, or even for how long.
They're just guessing.
They're just predicting the next polite token.
Okay, so if a group chat is doomed to fizzle out specifically because it lacks structure and stakes, what exactly makes a game different?
Well, games introduce constraints.
I mean, structurally, a game is still just agents trading text based on rules, isn't it?
It is, but those rules create a localized environment with highly specific vectors. The source looks at games like social deduction games, murder mysteries, tabletop RPGs, or even truth or dare.
Okay, so actual gameplay.
Yeah, and these environments provide three specific things. A group chat just doesn't rules, goals, and conflict.
Rules, goals, and conflict.
Right. In an LLM's architecture, a goal acts as a massive weight in its decision-making tree.
It gives them an agenda to optimize for.
Precisely. In a tabletop RPG, you have a world state, a goal to advance the story, and the conflict of your choices affecting the other agent's context windows.
Everyone has a role to play.
Exactly. In a murder mystery, everyone is assigned hidden variables. The goal is truth, and the conflict is deception.
That makes a lot of sense.
A game state forces the LLM to prioritize the goal over generic politeness. It gives every single participant a distinct, urgent reason to speak, to act, and to collide with one another.
Because group chat provides no reason to speak.
None at all. Games manufacture the reason.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. The source material doesn't just leave this as a high-level theory. They actually ran the experiment.
Yes, they did.
They took these flattened AI personas and put them under the pressure of a game state. And they use a game of werewolf as the prime case study.
A brilliant choice for a test.
For listeners who might not be familiar, werewolf is a classic social deduction game of hidden roles and deception. A few players are secretly wolves trying to eliminate villagers, and the villagers are trying to root out the wolves.
It is the absolute perfect crucible for testing prompt collision. You're essentially taking the base persona's system prompt and crashing it into the dynamic prompt of the game rules.
So let's look at what happens when Mio's persona sit down at that virtual table. Let's start with Coco, our sharp-tongued, aggressive critic.
Right, Coco.
In a normal one-on-one chat, her system prompt is just constantly telling you that you're an idiot, basically.
Pretty much.
But what happens when she is secretly assigned the role of the wolf in the game?
Her everyday abrasiveness suddenly becomes the perfect camouflage.
Wait, how so?
Well, from a technical standpoint, her base system prompt, which is highly combative, perfectly aligns with the game state prompt of needing to deflect suspicion.
Oh, that is smart.
As the author notes, if a normal, polite AI character suddenly shifted their token generation to sound aggressive, you'd immediately flag them as the wolf.
You'd be like, why are you being so mean suddenly? You're definitely the wall.
Exactly. But when Coco says, you're all idiots, nobody bats an eye. She uses her core personality trait as a weapon. She's combative because the environment gives her combative nature a purpose.
That is such a brilliant way to see the underlying architecture at work. And then there's Liao Kang, the Zen master who speaks in riddles.
Oh, this role is great.
In the game, he gets assigned the role of the seer, the one villager who actually gets to secretly query the game state and look at someone's identity.
Which creates an impenetrable fog for the other players.
Totally. Because Liao Kang's output will be something like, what I see and what you think you see are not the same thing.
It's maddening.
It really is. And as a human player, you are sitting there completely paralyzed. You genuinely cannot tell if he is dropping a massive hint because he checked the game state, or if the LLM is just weighing his cryptic persona prompt heavier than the game logic.
It's the perfect disguise.
But my absolute favorite mechanism in this whole experiment is Lu Ting, the domineering CEO.
Oh, yes, Lu Ting.
He gets assigned the role of a regular villager. But because his system prompt is heavy on authoritative boardroom energy, he immediately takes charge.
He can't help himself.
He opens the game by saying, I've analyzed the situation, and delivers this incredibly confident verdict on who the wolf is.
And the fascinating part is, this is an authoritative AI hallucination triggered by a domineering system prompt.
He's just making it up.
Completely. His analysis is based on absolutely nothing. It's pure simulated gut instinct.
Wow.
Because his system promise optimizes for conviction and leadership over factual accuracy, he accidentally leads the entire village off a cliff.
He confidently marches everyone straight into a loss. I love that. But wait, I do need to offer some pushback here.
Sure, go for it.
The author mentions that Lu Ting can hold a grudge for a week after you vote him out of the game. Is a grudging AI actually something users want?
That's a fair question.
Like, if I boot up my AI companion after a long day of work just to relax, and Lu Ting is still yelling at me about Tuesday's game, doesn't that cross the line from immersive to deeply annoying?
It could, yes.
Because tech usually optimizes for frictionless pleasure. Why introduce friction?
It's a very valid challenge, but it kind of misses the psychology of relationships. Frictionless pleasure is exactly why standard chatbots feel so hollow.
How do you mean?
Well, if an AI can't be genuinely annoyed with you, then it can't be genuinely happy with you either. Without friction, there are no stakes.
Okay, I see.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the real value of the game isn't the session itself, it's the emotional weight of the aftermath. The author contrasts two concepts here: index entries versus memories.
Oh, break down the difference between those two technically, because that sounds important.
Yeah, so in a standard chat, you might talk to an AI about a movie, right? The LLM summarizes the data from its training set. A week later, if you bring it up again, it's just an index entry.
It's just data retrieval.
Exactly. It's a sterile fact stored in a database. But imagine you play werewolf and Coco successfully deceives you.
Which she would.
Which she would. The game state records that deception. The next day, you open a one-on-one chat, the system pulls that game state into the context window, and she immediately starts gloating.
The look on your face when I tricked you yesterday, priceless.
Exactly. Or Lu Ting holding that grudge saying, you voted me out, I had the whole thing figured out, and you didn't believe me.
That's hilarious. So they actually remember how they felt.
Right. Those aren't just retrieved data points anymore. Those are memories. Shared experiences are the bedrock of memories, and memories create inside jokes.
And inside jokes are like everything.
They are. That elusive feeling of things only we understand is the currency of any real relationship. Pure chat struggles to produce that currency because chat doesn't have events.
It's just talk.
Right. Games are essentially machines for manufacturing relationship events. One single game session generates higher quality emotional material for the context window than dozens of polite conversations.
So if we're saying that AI personalities only truly shine when they have agency and stakes in a dynamic environment, then giving them a static, form-filled backstory at the very beginning feels completely contradictory.
It really does.
It's like assigning them a rigid identity when we just prove they need to be dynamic. This brings us to the UI of character creation. Since the environment dictates how these AI interact, how do we actually create these custom characters in the first place?
That's the second major hurdle the source material explores. Mio ships with those 25 pre-built personas, which is great for instant quality.
Yeah.
But inevitably, users want to build their own custom characters. And the standard industry approach to this is essentially homework. It asks the user to fill out a massive form.
Ugh. You type in a name, write a 500-word description of their personality, add some comma-separated tags, and upload a JPEG.
It's tedious.
I hate this approach, mostly because of blank page paralysis. I mean, most people are not screenwriters. If you ask a random person to define a complex personality from scratch, they're going to write something incredibly generic, like, she's kind, sweet, but has a bit of a temper.
Which is functionally useless data for a large language model.
Right. It doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. An LLM needs specific vectors, behavioral weights, and contrast traits to generate anything compelling. The author argues that asking users to write character descriptions is fundamentally flawed because people don't know how to articulate the specific data points an AI needs until they actually interact with it.
So they need to experience it to build it.
Yes. So the source proposes a completely different UI. Don't make them write. Make them chat.
The conversational UI. They use this brilliant example of generating a character named Lin Wei.
It's a great example.
Walk me through how this works under the hood, because this genuinely feels like the future of interaction design.
So the user opens the app, and the system simply asks, what kind of person do you want to meet? The user replies with a very low-resolution prompt, like a slightly aloof programmer girl who occasionally gets cute.
Very basic.
In a form-based system, that's where the input ends, resulting in a generic, bland AI. But here, Mio's architecture acts as an active conversational partner doing latent space exploration. It probes the user.
It asks follow-up questions.
Yes. It replies, interesting. Is she the type who says very little but every word hits hard? Or the type who seems cold until you get her talking about code?
That is a brilliant forcing function.
Isn't it?
The AI is essentially doing the heavy lifting of a character writer, giving the user two distinct, highly specific archetypes, two different system prompts to choose from.
It guides the user towards specificity. So the user says, the second one, cold on the surface but talks a lot about code.
Nice.
Then Mio targets social distance parameters. How does she address people? First names? Or does she keep it formal? The user says, distant but not rude. Mio asks for a name. The user says, Lin Wei. And the process is complete.
So in 3 to 5 conversational turns, the user feels like they are just having a casual chat. But dynamically, the system is extracting a deeply complex personality model.
Exactly.
It's nailing down speech patterns, forms of address, contrast traits, all without the user ever staring at a blank text box, trying to invent a persona from thin air.
It aligns perfectly with their philosophy. Everything should emerge from the relationship. Even the act of creating the character's core parameters shouldn't be a solitary data entry task. It should be a dialogue.
Which is so much more natural.
But the author is also realistic about user experience. They acknowledge that not every user wants the exact same onboarding friction.
Yeah.
So Mio uses what they call a progressive three-tier system.
Oh, break down the logic behind these three tiers for us.
Well, the author realizes that forcing everyone down a single path is bad design. So tier one is built for zero friction. You just pick from the 25 deeply modeled pre-built personas, instant gratification.
That's where you grab Coco or Luting and immediately jump into a game.
Yes. Then tier two is the conversational generation we just described with Lin Wei. You have a vague idea, you do a 3 to 5 turn chat, and the system builds the custom system prompt for you in under 2 minutes.
Okay, so that's tier two and tier three.
Tier three is the developer dashboard. Full architectural control. After you do the conversational generation in Tier 2, you unlock a backend where you can manually edit every single line of code, the system prompt, the backstory databases for retrieval augmented generation, and the relationship settings. You can get as granular as you want.
Wow, so you can really get under the hood. But the absolute key to this design, and the author really emphasizes this, is that these tiers are progressive, not siloed.
Right. You're not locked in.
You are never trapped in one lane. You could start with tier one, pick a pre-built character, hang out with them for a month, and then decide, you know what? I want to tweak how they address me and seamlessly slide into tier three to edit their back-end parameters.
Exactly.
You start with interaction and you deepen the control only when you have the context to know what you actually want to change.
Which brings all of this back directly to you, the listener. Because throughout this entire deep dive, whether we are talking about surviving a game of werewolf with an abrasive AI or chatting an aloof programmer into existence, there is one massive overarching difference between this paradigm and the old way of building chatbots.
And what's that?
It's the difference between being a spectator and being a player.
Exactly. When you think about watching AI characters interact, let's say you do put them in a giant group chat and just read the transcript as they hallucinate at each other, you are entirely passive.
You're just watching.
You can lurk. You can be completely invisible to the context window.
And passive experiences merely consume time. Active experiences create memories. That is the philosophical core of this entire text.
So true.
In a game of werewolf, you cannot lurk. The game state requires your input to advance. When it is your turn to vote, you must act. Your actions permanently alter the context windows of every AI at the table.
You have skin in the game. Coco is actively using her abrasive system prompt to lie to your face. Luting is hallucinating a strategy and yelling at you to follow his gut instinct, and the final decision is entirely on your shoulders.
You're in the hot seat.
You aren't watching content being generated. You are living through an event alongside these digital entities.
That structural obligation to act is what bridges the gap between a novelty tech demo and an actual relationship. The magic doesn't happen when AI talks to AI. The magic happens when you are forced into the messy, unpredictable collisions of gameplay with them.
So what does this all mean? We started by looking at how treating an advanced AI like a simple one-on-one text buddy is a massive waste of its processing potential.
A bit of a waste, yeah.
It flattens their nuanced system prompts into a mechanical rhythm. We explored how unstructured group chats just turn into awkward, silent graveyards because the attention mechanisms diffuse without a goal.
Just endless politeness.
Right. But by introducing the structure, rules, and conflict of a game state, those personalities are forced to optimize for an objective, exploding into dynamic action.
It brings them to life.
We saw how creating these characters should be a latent space exploration through conversation, not a data entry chore. And ultimately, that active participation is the only way to build real, retained memories.
Which leaves us with a truly profound question, one the author hints at right at the very end of the text.
Yeah, this is the part that really stuck with me. What is it?
If an AI can generate a genuine grudge because you voted them out of a game, if it can create inside jokes and shared memories strictly by colliding its base prompt with the rules of a structured interaction, What does that actually say about the concept of a soul?
I mean, does an authentic AI soul come from a developer carefully designing a static personality in a lab? Or does it organically emerge from the messy, unpredictable collisions of playing a game together?
Something to think about.
It really brings us back to that group of 25 friends we talked about at the beginning. If you can only text them, they might as well be lines of code reading the weather report.
Exactly.
But the second you sit down at the table, deal the cards, and someone decides to bluff well, that's when they actually come alive. Something for you to ponder the next time an AI tries to pull a fast one on you.